From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White in for Beth Ruyak. The California legislature is unveiling a sweeping new overhaul of how it would investigate sexual harassment complaints against everyone from lawmakers to interns. The new process will be discussed at a subcommittee hearing this morning and finalized during the next few weeks. Capital Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler is here to tell us more. Hey, Ben.
Good morning.
So this all stemmed from the Me Too movement, and we've said enough, correct?
Yeah. So last fall, as the allegations against Harvey Weinstein emerged nationally, here at the state capitol, there was a letter signed by nearly 150 women who work in and around the capitol, the letter entitled, "We Said Enough," and saying, look, we need to bring up this culture around the Capitol that has been a pervasive issue for years and decades and enough. So in and around that same time, there were investigations against lawmakers and senior staff, and that has resulted, some of the allegations have resulted in members stepping down. Former Assembly members Matt DeBobne and Raul Bocanegra, former State Senator Tony Mendoza, and an allegation most recently against current Assemblywoman Christina Garcia that was the most severe allegations were not found to be substantiated, but we've actually had the investigation be reopened recently because of an appeal filed by one of the former legislative staffers who made one of the allegations. So you've had a very inconsistent system of how to handle these complaints. And that is what the process, a new process, a new proposal that lawmakers are putting out seeks to address.
And the woman tasked with putting all of this together is Assemblywoman Laura Friedman. And you spoke with her?
Yeah, a Democrat from the Los Angeles area, from Glendale. She and on the Senate side, Los Angeles State Senator Holly Mitchell are the chair and vice chair, respectively, of a joint subcommittee of rules between the Senate and the Assembly. And they have spent the last several months, they and their colleagues, holding hearings trying to examine what would be a good system to bring the two houses together with a single shared policy. So we sat down late last week to talk through the new system.
We're proposing to have a new division that will be a bicameral division to investigate claims of sexual harassment, discrimination, but also to expand our definition of what's acceptable under our policy, and to try to get more reporting of incidents much earlier. So things that might seem relatively minor, or even that are relatively minor, that are directed against a protected class. So based on race, age, disability, gender, sexual orientation, that kind of thing, to be reported so that we can intervene much earlier. To do that and to properly investigate and adjudicate that, we're going to have a new panel, which will be independent, that will be subject matter experts, long-time employment law attorneys, retired civil justices who know employment law, that sort of person, to hear all of those reports and then to decide if there's been a violation of our policy and at what level and what the proper response will be. And that will be the same process, whether it's an employee or a member or even a member of the public necessarily. They won't maybe participate, but to see whether there's been a violation of our policy and then to make a recommendation of what the response should be.
And then each house retains power to decide what to do about it, right?
Well, the house could decide whether or not to accept the recommended response. They can't make their own determination about whether there was a violation. The panel will make that decision and what type of violation it is. And they can decide whether or not to accept the recommendation of the panel. I anticipate that they will usually accept it. And then part of the panel process is that the immediate supervisor, or it could be the speaker or pro tem, would be at that panel discussion. So they would discuss the recommendation with them, and they might together decide that a different approach is more appropriate based on whatever information that they might bring to the table that's different than what the panel has, you know, because they know those people. They may have known them for years. They might have something that they can add. But hopefully they'll come to terms over what the correct response is. And if they don't agree and do something different, they have to make written findings that them will be kept, that those records will be retained so that there's you know, they have to sort of put pen to paper and explain why they didn't go along with the recommendation.
But that won't be public. Among the many documents that will and will not be public, the rationale for disagreeing with the panel would not be public.
That will not be public. And it would be up to the Speaker or the pro tem, if it's a member, to decide whether they want to make the recommendation public. Right now, they don't have to do that, but they could very well decide to make the recommendation public and to explain why they're taking whatever action they're taking.
Why is this better than the old system?
Well, for one thing, it treats members and staff the same because it has a group of people who are independent from the legislature, who are experts in the area, whereas in the past, you were asking human resources people to make a determination even about a member, which will always be seen as being biased. They'll always be seen as that they are not in a position of having the freedom to make the kind of recommendation that they might otherwise make. Whether that's true or not, that's the perception. And because you have an outside group, not just the speaker and the pro tem, deciding what that response should be, because you have at least a recommendation from that panel. Also because we're going to be asking our staff and requiring staff to report about incidents that are much earlier in the process or much more minor. So the one joke that's against a protected class, the one comment, a one touch that somebody feels is inappropriate or makes them uncomfortable, we're going to do a lot of training to make sure that people understand that we want those reports, not because we're going to fire people or be punitive, but because we want to intervene and give people the training and the counseling that they need to stop the behavior before we end up in a situation where there's a lawsuit, before we end up in a situation where someone has gone through months of feeling uncomfortable in the workplace. We want to get those reports so that we can intervene early, because most people have a lot of people have no idea that what they're doing is making someone uncomfortable. So we want to make sure that we are able to correct people's behavior, but also that everybody knows that we take their ability to be in a harassment-free workplace and in a safe workplace very seriously. And so we expect that once this policy is instituted, that as it continues, what we want is that policy of respect is internalized and becomes our culture here. So that it's not about enforcement, it's about this is the kind of culture that we all embody. And if somebody is acting outside of that and they're acting disrespectfully, that their coworkers will help to correct that.
And finally, do you think this will be sufficient to regain the trust of the staffers in this building and the Capitol community as a whole that has been truly shaken? And a lot of folks say, look, I don't feel I can trust reporting to the system.
Well, this is a huge step. It's huge, and it's going to change at every level. I've told you about a few things, but everything's going to change. How we do training, what we train about, what we expect people to report. Having a bicameral body within the legislature is brand new. That the houses are acting, with unity. To have an outside group that's under contract with the legislature, but siloed off from the other departments to make independent determinations about violations of policy and to work with staff to do that. This is all a sea change in terms of how this building is operated, not to mention the transparency and everything else. And so gaining trust takes time. There's no way you could change that overnight. So we're going to have to keep evaluating and looking at the policy and tweaking the policy. But I would hope that when people look at this, they'll realize what a huge effort this has been and that this isn't just changing one or two things. This is us changing every single aspect of our policies and our prevention.
And that is Assemblymember Laura Friedman from the Los Angeles area speaking with our Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler, who is here in studio with us. Ben, what sort of early response are you getting to this plan?
It's been positive so far, both folks I've talked to privately and also some public statements. For example, Adama Iwu, who founded the We Said Enough effort that launched the Me Too movement at the state capitol, said she wanted to see final language of the proposal, but she offered some early praise after hearing a description of the process. And what she said is that she continues to be encouraged by the legislature taking this seriously. She said it sounds like California is taking steps to figure out a fair process and address some of the issues that have been chronic and systemic in the Capitol community.
Are there aspects of the plan that could draw criticism?
Well, I think some questions that people might have as they take some time to digest this proposal deal with what happens near the end of the process. So, you know, at the beginning, a complaint comes in and this new unit, investigative unit in the Legislative Council's office would determine whether it should be investigated internally or whether it with a high-ranking staffer or lawmaker they should contract out, or whether it really belongs as a basic HR question with the Senate or Assembly separately. Then they go ahead. There are some investigations that happen in the unit, and then the findings of fact and the substantiation determinations are made by this outside panel, and then the outside panel makes recommendations about what to do. Now, after that, it goes back to each House, the Senate or Assembly, and they get to decide. It is the Senate or the Assembly that will decide to accept or reject the panel's recommendations and decide on the appropriate response. So there could be questions whether politics get in the way or not, and in large part it may depend on how it's handled. And then you also have the fact that if the House decides against the panel's recommendation, it must document the reasons, but that document does not need to be public. Under the current policy, only the original complaint and the final consequences will be made public for substantiated claims, and only then against lawmakers or senior staff. So if the, let's say, Assembly or Senate decides to go a different direction from what the panel decides, we may not know that, and we may not know why they choose to do that. So those are some questions that I think are going to probably want to be discussed by advocates through this process. That said, I think in the end, it's just going to take time and people willing to file complaints for the system to prove what's working, what still needs changes, and for the legislative leadership to regain or earn in the first place the trust of the Capitol community.
Ben, a procedural question for those of us who don't understand the workings of how all this gets put into place. We have that subcommittee hearing this morning. What after that?
Then there's going to be more hearings and discussion. And finally, they may go back and refine the proposal. Then there will be a vote of the committee. And then you still have to implement it. So Legislative Council's office would need to go ahead and hire the people for this unit and figure out how much money it's going to cost. And the legislature will probably need to appropriate some money for that. And so I don't think this unit is going to actually start working, this policy going to get underway until next year's legislative session.
All right. Over the last few weeks, you and I have spoken budget quite a bit. Senate and Assembly, however, have passed a budget. It happened last week. It's now awaiting Governor Brown's signature. Who would you say were the big winners and losers?
Well, I think the biggest the folks making the biggest complaints are folks who are advocating for increased health care access for Californians living here illegally and for higher subsidies for people who are living here legally and using the Covered California exchange under the Affordable Care Act, but struggling to afford the premiums, or maybe choosing not to participate in the exchange and instead pay the penalty through the individual mandate because they can't afford the premiums. So there was a proposal from the Assembly for $1 billion into that. Barely anything got accepted. There is going to be an effort to work through create an all claims database as an effort to try to figure out how much some medical procedures cost and how it might vary from plan to plan, because there's a lot of opaqueness on that. But who won? Well, there's more money in this budget for early care, child care. There's more, record high education funding there. And also the UC and CSU are getting money intended to avert a tuition increase this fall. So you could say that UC and CSU students are winners in this proposal.
And Republicans have praised the rainy day fund, but say we're still spending too much.
Yeah, the rainy day fund is going to get maxed out at, $13-something billion dollars. Then there's other reserves that'll hold a couple billion dollars more. So roughly $16 billion total in reserve. But yet you still have a budget, a spending plan, nearly $140 billion general fund, and it's growing three times the rate of inflation. And that's a complaint that Republicans have.
Governor Jerry Brown is expected to sign it, of course. He has the power of the line item veto, right? But he doesn't use it very often?
He has not used it very much. He has instead really negotiated things out with the legislature before it reaches his desk.
Uh-huh. All right. Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler with a lot of state politics news this morning. Thank you, Ben.
You're welcome.
And this is Insight, of course. We have more on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to your NPR station, Capitol Public Radio.